Hello there, and welcome to the Anniversary Brothers podcast, the podcast where we talk about the anniversaries of your favorite TV shows and movies. I am your host, Josh Sonecki, and joining me today is my co-host, my brother, the Sam Wilson to my Steve Rogers, Aaron Sonecki. Aaron, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. I'll take that as a compliment. You could have said I was like the Black Widow to your Steve Rogers or something. I don't know.
I could have, but I felt like this was a better one. You know,
yeah.
Just gonna, you know, after we finish this podcast, I'm going to get really old and I'm going to give you all my stuff and I'm going to just go to the moon or something.
Right.
But spoilers for later MCU films. So, yes, we are going to be talking about the 10th anniversary of Captain America: The Winter Soldier, which came out in April 2014, which I know we say this every single time we do one of these podcasts almost, but wow, 10 years. That is somewhat unbelievable. Both feels like way too short a time and also way too long. But Aaron, I'm curious. I know I have a lot to say when it comes to my relationship with this film, but could you tell me more about when you first saw this and what your thoughts were originally?
Yeah, so I first saw this when I was a senior in college. I saw it with one of my friends at the local multiplex. And
multiplex.
It's a multiplex.
It's okay.
A word, you know, multiple screens, multiplex.
Okay, I've just never heard anyone say that out loud before.
Whatever. So yeah, I saw it, and I was really kind of excited to see the movie when it came out, because it seemed like they were going in an interesting direction with it. It had, you know, a lot more espionage involved. You know, where the first Captain America is a war movie where he's fighting in World War II. This is all him in the present day, and it's got spy stuff. Like I said, it's got Black Widow. It's got more stuff with S.H.I.E.L.D. So, and it just looked like it had a lot of cool action. So yeah, that's my experience seeing it.
Okay. Yeah. And it was also the first movie featuring Captain America following the Avengers.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you don't count Thor: The Dark World, where Loki plays Captain America.
We don't count.
Okay,
Thor the Dark World for anything. we tried to forget Thor the Dark World, except for the parts with Loki. So actually, that is one of the good parts of it. So
yeah.
Okay, nice. So yeah, I wasn't sure when you first saw it or what the context was. So I'm appreciated you sharing that. As for me, I may have talked about some of this previously when we talked about Captain America: The First Avenger a few years ago for its anniversary. But coming into this film, this was one I was excited for, even though prior to this, I really wasn't much of a Captain America fan. I had obviously seen the Avengers, but he wasn't my favorite Avenger in that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen all of the first movie, Captain America: The First Avenger. I'd only seen like pieces of it on TV, which is not a very good way to watch anything, but especially... Mm-hmm. A movie like that, I'd say. And that all being said, like I was excited for this. I remember prior to this coming out, there was a stand at the local movie theater where it was the poster, basically as a cutout of Captain America standing on the hangar of the Quinjet. Except Captain America was not there, but you had his shield there as a prop that you could stand with. And I have a picture of me still somewhere on my computer, I think. Aaron just posted it. There we go.
Low res, as low as res could be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was taken on a not smartphone. That was a flip phone photo.
And Josh, your hair is so long.
Yeah, got my long hair, rocking my old Packers jacket, and wearing a Batman T-shirt. So... already had a good habit of mixing universes, which will come up later. So again, I was excited for this one, even though I wasn't a huge fan of the character. And then I saw it and I was absolutely blown away. I remember coming home after seeing this film and going right to Facebook and posting about it and saying how much I enjoyed it. I believe I said it was the Dark Knight of Marvel movies more or less what I had said. And I'll stand by that, and you know, definitely want to get into that in terms of like the themes that are, you know, present in the film and the conflict. So I came away, you know, very high on this movie, and you know, on a more personal note, this is why I'm a Captain America fan now. And as a result, you know, later that year I went out and bought a Captain America shirt, and as a result, later the following year, I met my wife, or you know, my now wife, because I was wearing a Captain America shirt, and she came up to me because she saw I was wearing it. So I, you know, imagine there would have been other opportunities for us to meet, but that is really what helped me, you know, find the love of my life. So it's strange to think, but like this movie, you know, again, not only being one that I thoroughly enjoy, also like changed the trajectory of my life. So I owe a lot to this movie. So not to get too sappy, but And then beyond that, Aaron can attest, having been the best man at my wedding, like I later then had a Captain America shield at my wedding. So it was again, Captain America is a very important character for me, and it all really stems back to this film. So on that note, Aaron, for those who have not seen Captain America: The Winter Soldier, or if it's been a while for them, could you give us a brief plot summary?
Yeah, so this movie takes place, like you said, after the Avengers. Captain America, now living in the present 21st century, is trying to navigate the sort of complicated geopolitical landscape as, you know, working for S.H.I.E.L.D., for Nick Fury, and with Black Widow. And he's getting really frustrated with it because, you know, both of them are keeping things from him. Then there's this very quickly, there's this conspiracy that seems like is unfolding, where it seems like there are people out to get them. And they're like, they don't know why. It has something to do with this Project Insight, which has all these sort of automated helicarriers. And so he's on the run, aided by Black Widow and Sam Wilson, as you mentioned. And there are, I mean, we'll get into, I guess, the bigger plot, but there are secrets from the past that tie into the first movie that, you know, really changed the entire course of, well, we can debate how much it really changed the course of the MCU, but at the time it was earth-shattering, the revelations in this movie concerning what the conspiracy entails.
Yeah, definitely changed the plot of one TV show at the time.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
All right. No, yeah. Excellent summary without getting too much into the spoilers of it all. So, yeah, before we get into all the lovely spoilers of this film, let's take a quick moment to throw it to some of the other wonderful podcasters here at the Pop Break. And we'll be right back after the break.
Are you a diehard Marvel zombie who compulsively rewatches every movie and TV show you can get your hands on from the House of Ideas?
Or are you a new or lapsed Marvel fan looking for an excuse to finally catch up on what your buddies have been going on and on and on about for as long as you've known them?
Then, folks, do we have the show for you?
Head over to the Pop Break Today podcast feed on all your favorite platforms to check out myself, Phil Pumpkin, and my co-host, Alex Marcus, on Bill vs. the MCU, where we review every single installment of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Along with a journey around the Marvel multiverses, where we check in on MCU-adjacent content like Netflix's The Defenders Saga, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Fox's X-Men franchise, and so much more.
New episodes premiere the second Tuesday of every month on thepopbreak.com and the Pop Break Today podcast feed.
Hello, I'm Daniel Cohen, former film editor of thepopbreak.com, and I've got a Batman podcast for you. We discuss Batman's past, present, and future, and do a lot of rankings episodes. Yes, we rank the movies, villains, That's not all. We even ranked all the Batman movie trailers throughout history. Yes, we ranked Batman trailers. I dare you to find another Batman podcast that did that. So join me and frequent hosts Alex Marcus and Bill Bakken, as well as a plethora of Bat guests, as we discuss Batman and plenty of DC on film as well. Also, fair warning, I'm a BVS fan, but don't let that scare you away. Trust me, I get mocked and ridiculed more than the Martha line for taking that stance. So relax and tune in on the last Tuesday of every month on the Pop Break Today feed.
Hello and welcome back. So as we were saying, let's get into the juicy spoilers of it all. So, Aaron, now that it's been 10 years and we're revisiting this, how do you feel about the film today?
Right. So I overall enjoyed it originally, and I was kind of maybe a little let down based on people were saying like, oh, this movie is the best thing ever. And I was like, I don't know. It's like, it's good, but it's like, maybe not the best thing ever. But like, and I would still stand by, I feel I like it more having rewatched it. This is probably the third or fourth time I've watched it, which is like child's play compared to how many times you've probably watched it.
Yes, that's accurate. Yeah. I honestly don't know how many times I've watched this. I've lost track.
This is like Bill and Point Break. Like, it's
maybe I would say that there are a few movies where I honestly can't say how many times I watched them because I've seen them so many times. This is one of them. And the other one is It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
And I'd say probably any of the three original Star Wars.
Yeah.
Everything else, I feel like I can give you a ballpark estimation. For these, I'm like, nope, I've got no idea. I've watched them too many times to know.
And like for me, like, so I've definitely watched it at least three times start to finish. But then like this movie is on TV all the time. I know you mentioned the first one. Like this is like FX. Like this is what they live for, is to play this movie when they're not playing Shogun, I guess, or whatever.
Mm. So good. So good.
So I though Shogun is maybe like FX on Hulu. I don't know. That's a I digress.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all know that FX has the movies.
Yeah.
And this is just further
and
proof of that.
DVD extras or whatever on TV.
Yeah. No, I remember they would always play Iron Man, the first two Iron Man, all the time.
Oh, they always have Iron Man 3. They have on a lot, too.
Yeah. Yeah. As someone who doesn't have cable anymore, sometimes I do miss that, just being able to turn on the TV and it's like, let's see, what MC movies on FX now?
Right, we just watch it on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
I mean, that's how did you watch this? You have this on Blu-ray, right?
I have this on Blu-ray.
How'd you watch this?
I watched it on Disney Plus though.
Oh, okay, that's how I watched it.
Just for the sake of
we also have a DVD of this lurking around somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. The DVD that this is a bit of a tangent. When we had family over for Christmas several years ago, our uncle, for whatever reason, just decided, I want to watch a movie. Here, I'm going to watch this Captain America thing.
Uh-huh.
And so he somehow managed to get this old combo DVD VCR player to work. I think probably our dad was the one who actually made it work.
Okay.
And watched that on there. And he's like, yeah, it's pretty good movie.
Yeah, our uncle's. I remember when we were like watching A Wonderful Life that you mentioned before. It's like, yeah, where could I go out to the store and buy this on videotape?
Yeah, and I'd be like,
and Dave, granted, like, he said this in like 2014 or something.
Oh yeah, it was 2014, if later, probably later.
Later.
It would be like nowhere. You can't buy that on VHS anywhere. They don't make those anymore.
And then he was like talking to our cousin where he's like, he's talking about the latest Batman movie. He's like, yeah, Black Knight Rise or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and his.
Yeah. I mean, we could have a whole podcast about our Uncle Dave, but I digress.
Loves his Captain Blood.
Yeah. Captain Blood. Yeah. So he's more into Captain Blood than Captain America. But
yeah, I guess so. But yeah, even he was one who enjoyed this. So, yeah, no, between watching it on DVD, Blu-ray, Disney Plus, I saw it, I should have mentioned this earlier, I saw it twice in theaters.
Oh, really? Okay.
I believe I saw it the first time with our friend Eddie.
Okay.
And I think I saw it another time with a friend from college, James.
Right, okay. We saw the Avengers with Eddie.
Yes, yeah.
At the local multiplex. I mean, not calling it a multiplex when it only had three screens is kind of a stretch, but
yes, we went to our local cinema.
Yeah, this local cinema.
Yeah, and it was in Technicolor and everything.
Then we went to the discotheque.
Discotheque. What are you even talking about? You're just making up words.
No, it's a word.
But yeah, so I watched this again, though, on Disney Plus. And I mean, even though I've seen this again a countless amount of times at this point, I still love this movie so much. Uh-huh. There are so many things about this that just bring such a stupid smile to my face.
Yeah.
Even though, again, I could tell you pretty much line for line what's going to happen.
When Captain America says that he ate a big breakfast, that makes you really happy.
What a great line. Happy for him. Happy for him. Yeah, that's Sam Wilson's cooking. He's a good cook, apparently. No, I don't. I was worried, though, going back, because, I mean, at this point, we've seen so many, you know, movies with Captain America, so many MCU movies. Like, well, like, this movie has lost some of its charm for me. Like, will, like, kind of the luster have worn off from it? And I don't think so. I think this movie is still as, you know, fantastic as the first time I saw it. Obviously, the twists are no longer twists. Like, I know, obviously, now that Hydra has infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D., and that, you know, Nick Fury is going to fake his death and all these things. But that's, I mean, as a first time viewer, those are the things that I think hit you particularly hard. As a repeat viewer, what gets me more is the themes that this film is exploring in terms of the trade-off between security and privacy, which certainly is an incredibly important and still relevant issue in you know our world today.
Right.
And just the characters. Like I love these characters so much, but I especially love how it unpacks Captain America, and not just like as a fish out of water character, because I feel like that is sometimes what you can get with him or with any, you know, character who's like in this, you know, time travel setting. I mean, we talked about Futurama the other day, another character frozen for
Fry hasn't years. Beat in years.
Yes, yes. It's, I mean, it's not a competition, but yes, Fry does have him beat. But they don't lean too much into that in the sense of, oh wow, what's this technology? Oh, a smartphone? Wow. It's more about, you know, him trying to come to terms with the, as you said, like the kind of the spycraft, the geopolitical conflict of it, and trying to understand how he fits in as a soldier from a different era, who has these values and these beliefs that don't seem to align with the organization that he's meant to be representing. So I love that. And then, I mean, just like the interactions are great. Like, I love the relationship between Sam and Steve. Like, obviously, this is, I think, one of the best uses of Scarlett Johansson in all of the MCU. And you know, I can see why people ship, you know, Steve and Bucky. Like, you know, I could totally buy that from this and from the first film. So again, so much to love. Aaron, I'm curious, are there any characters or performances that really stood out to you watching it this time around?
I would say that, I mean, it's not something that I didn't know before, but I do think that it is really interesting the way they use Black Widow in this movie, where she is very duplicitous with him and you're never really sure where her loyalties lie. But there's also sort of this playfulness with them. She's trying to like get him on a date with, you know, somebody at work.
Yes.
Or she's just kind of poking fun of him at sometimes.
Yeah. Which I love, but I imagine some of those moments could ruffle some feathers. Just because I know that might fit too much in like the Marvel jokiness that some people don't
like. You see, I that's true, but I felt like this movie had a pretty good balance where it was very serious at times, but it never felt like it derailed the movie just for a joke. Usually those lines like the fact that Captain has he's heavier than he looks because he had a big breakfast. Like, they're just very like one note and then they go on to do, you know, whatever's next. They're not, you know, for some people, the infamous Tony Stank, you know, line from Civil War.
I like that joke. I'm sorry. I know it's stupid, but I like it. Yeah, no, I don't think the humor from this is just dry. I think it's all very much like within the realm of who these characters are. Because, I mean, Black Widow is already like an incredibly sarcastic character. Yeah. Like we saw that in The Avengers, mm-hmm. Like in her first scene in that. Less so maybe in her first appearance in Iron Man 2, but I mean, she was really undercover for most of that. Mm-hmm. But then I think even though it's probably not a quality that a lot of people would necessarily point to, and I don't think he's necessarily one of like the big comedians of the MCU, like I do think that the way that Chris Evans plays Captain America, like there is often time for some banter and some humor. Like you get that in the first film more with like the kind of like the awkwardness of yeah. him. In this, you get it more with the, again, there is some of this kind of world where like I don't belong here, like uh-huh. All the other members of my barbershop quartet are dead. Yeah. Like he's also got like a dryness to his humor. Uh-huh. That I think you did see it moments again in the first Avenger, but not so much in the Avengers, where I think a lot of that characterization is kind of on rocky ground. I mean, I don't think that, as much as I like the Avengers, I feel like Joss Whedon didn't really know how to use that character.
It's just mostly like, I want to punch Iron Man in the face. That's my character arc.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and like, obviously the suit for that one is pretty.
It has no like back design. It's just blank.
Yeah. Yeah. So that I think was a poor showing for him compared to this, where yes, mm-hmm. you do get to see like multi layers of him, where like you get the kind of the awkward, like, I don't belong here, like I don't know what I'm doing in this world, this kind of like pensive reflection of his place in the universe now.
Yeah.
As well as the fun banter he has with Sam and with Natasha, although sometimes he gets really like angry, it seems like, with yeah. Natasha and Fury. Like he seems to really reach a boiling point sometimes with them. But I think that clearly like the biggest relationship that has to be highlighted is his with Bucky. I mean, I think that is really where, like, even though he doesn't find out that the Winter Soldier is Bucky until like there's, I think, maybe like an hour left in the movie, if that, yeah. That's like a turning point where uh-huh. like you really see, I think, Chris Evans bring out this vulnerability that mm-hmm. wasn't there before.
Right. I will say that, I mean, it's one of those things that I wish that it was, they were somehow able to play that one close to the vest and like that be like a big surprise. But like the Winter Soldier comic is like, was very popular. I mean, that's the whole reason why they adapted it. So people knew going in, or at least most people knew, that Bucky is the Winter Soldier.
Right.
So right. like, so if I didn't know that, I think like I would have been, especially because I don't think I knew that when I saw the first Avenger. So when he died, I'm like, wait, he died? Like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah. Yeah. No, there is a certain, not anticlimactic, but it does kind of take away from the oomph of the reveal, because, yeah, so many of us knew going and like, oh, yeah. But that's Bucky. Like that's
right.
Clearly, well, Bucky, we know from the comics that it has to be right. Bucky.
I mean, of course, the Bucky from the comics is also like a kid when they aged him up in the first Avenger, which we talked about. But he like also died, which sounds gruesome. And there used to be like an old adage that, like, if I remember it correctly, there are only like three people who stay dead in comics. It's Bucky, Jason Todd, and Uncle Ben. And two of those people got brought back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Waynes were also sometimes.
Yeah. Something. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that, no, I mean, with that, the comic was a big deal at the time because it had broken this rule. And I actually, since having watched this the first time, I've gone back and I've read the original run of the comic, by, Ed Brubaker. And, I really like it. I think mm-hmm. it is. There's a reason why it's probably the most well-known Captain America story of all time. Mm-hmm. Having read some other runs in the recent past, a lot of them are not very good, to be mm-hmm. honest. The one where Steve, you know, becomes a double, triple Hydra agent.
Yeah.
Pretty bad. pretty awful.
But that got so many parodies from online. You got like Ash giving Pikachu to Team Rocket saying "Hail Team Rocket."
Yeah. And obviously we got a good funny callback to that in Endgame later with the Hail Hydra moment. But again, I think this the storyline it's pulling from is already excellent, but they also elevated it partially because I do think the decision to age up Bucky in the first film was a really, really smart one. I think this works a lot better with Bucky being a childhood friend who grew up alongside Steve rather than being this plucky sidekick. And having also read some of like the old Captain America comics, like the original ones back in the day, like I think that was a necessary change when they adapted these movies, so very glad they did that.
As far as other performances, and I'm not like the most familiar with his filmography, so like it probably would feel even more surreal, but just the fact that Robert Redford is in this movie is so wild.
Yeah.
That like one of like the last actors I would have expected to be in a superhero movie, and like hear him deliver lines like "you have to have Iron Man come to my granddaughter's birthday party." I'm like, there's a reason why like he's in this movie, because this movie pulls so much from, which was like advertised at the time. This was kind of their first big foray into like kind of expanding the MCU into different genres, where it's trying to emulate a lot of the 70s kind of political conspiracy thrillers. Mm-hmm. So and I'm pretty sure they did cite 3 Days of the Condor with Robert Redford as one of the big inspirations. You also have a movie which I haven't seen, but I've imagined was an inspiration, is Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman, where Laurence Olivier plays like an ex-Nazi or whatever. I think that's probably how they won him over. It was like, listen, this is just like what you've done before, just in a different, you know, this time you're the bad guy.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know. He might have also been like, maybe his granddaughter was like a Marvel fan.
Yeah. As shocking as it is at first that he would go for this kind of project, no, I do think because so much of it does pay tribute to or draw from, you know, films that he was in or, you know, a genre that he was familiar with, I think that definitely probably added to his interest. And I think he's really, really good in it. I mean, I think he, because, you know, we come in with these expectations of, oh, Robert Redford, like he's, you know, he's always, maybe not always, but he's often like the protagonist or hero.
Yeah.
Like, we could expect him to be one of the good guys. And so, again, when you have the reveal that, no, actually he is the head of Hydra, that is, I think, all the more powerful because it defies your expectations. And in some ways, even when he does that twist, like he's never the mustache twirling villain. Like he's there the whole time being like, no, actually, like our enemies are your enemies. Like we want to protect the world from war and chaos. And like, actually, Nick Fury, the reason I learned that diplomacy doesn't always work is because of your actions. Uh-huh. And Bogota, when you saved my daughter. So like, ooh, like he's not, even though he's Hydra, he's not like the over the top Red Skull.
Right.
Of it.
I do find it funny that like as soon as he dies, you have the more like caricature Hydra. Whatever, Von Strucker or whatever, is that his name?
Oh, yes.
He's the much more, you know, the mustache twirling, has like his monocle.
Yes.
Makes grand speeches about the Age of Miracles.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a character. But speaking of the dynamic between Alexander Pierce, played by Robert Redford, and Nick Fury, I think that is another really interesting relationship where you, first off, like you've got these two incredible actors that, as far as I know, have never been in the same film before.
I mean, they, especially Samuel Jackson, has been in so many things that like he just pops up and you're like, what? Like when I was rewatching Goodfellas, I'm like, he was in Goodfellas, like he's just been in so much. So there's always a possibility they've been in the same movie.
Yeah, yeah, but not that I can think of all time ahead. But I love their dynamic.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, Samuel Jackson has been doing this role of Nick Fury for so long now, but And he's not even in like half this movie, mm-hmm. but I think this is probably his best performance in all of the MCU.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I guess it's not Secret Invasion.
He's good in Secret Invasion.
Okay. He's just let down by the material.
Yeah, Secret Invasion is just crap. Like, it's not his fault. I mean, honestly, Secret Invasion wishes it was this. Like, this is what I think they wanted Secret Invasion to feel like, and they failed. Because it has, like, a similar kind of conspiratorial vibe of, like, who can we trust? Like, who's you know, out to get us? Like, what's going on here? But they don't really play with it. Effectively, but I mean, the less we talk about Secret Invasion, the better. But no, I think Samuel Jackson is great in this as this almost like an antagonistic force at times, but also another one who is really there to challenge Steve Rogers for most time. Just kind of like he's not there to hold his hand through this. Like there's a strained relationship, which I think works as a good like follow-up to the Avengers, where you do have some of the seeds planted for that with Steve finding out about some of the weapons or technology that SHIELD is using and being, you know, upset about it and confronting you know, Fury and everyone. So I like that they, you know, further kind of drove that point home.
Right. I know how permission to just mildly criticize this movie. I know
no.
that like
no, you can go ahead.
Okay. So in Captain America, the Wiener Soldier. No, but
and that was the Anniversary Brothers podcast. We'll be back never again.
I'm joking, but this isn't really a fault of this movie. It's more a fault of, I think, the MCU as a whole, is that the thing that you just talked about where he learns about the weapons they're using made from the Tesseract. I feel like in this movie and then Age of Ultron, they keep like making the same mistake over and over again. It's like, we have this technology that or something that we shouldn't abuse, but like we're going to abuse it anyway, even though we like have a debate about it.
Yeah, no, that's true. That does seem to be a reoccurring element in those movies.
I feel like I want to say this is the best use of it, because in Avengers is almost sort of tangential. It's just sort of like to get Cap on Fury's bad side. And then I don't know, later with Ultron, I don't know, it's almost unfair to kind of talk about, because that's not even like a Captain America thing, that's an Iron Man thing.
Yeah. But no, I think you're right to bring that up as a plot point that they seem to be kind of stuck on for a few years there. There's a few other characters we haven't gotten to, but like I think one of the other ones that I want to mention, even though she's in it for a very, very short time, is I really want to talk about the brief scene with Hayley Atwell as Peggy Carter.
Do you have your tissues?
I'm just gonna break down crying any second now. That scene is just so heartbreaking. Like it is like it eviscerated me. Like I was and again, even without having seen like all of the first movie, when I saw this first theaters, I was like already like, whoa, this is heavy. And then now, you know, years later, being a huge fan of it and being a I think a very you know faithful fan to Peggy Carter as a character and all of her iterations, and also just a Hayley Atwell fan, like that scene hits so hard. Like the way that she sells it, like first off, like sometimes that kind of like aging process, and this was before I think there was an over-reliance on maybe some like the digital aging. I think a lot of this was prosthetics and makeup. I think it looks pretty good. Not perfect.
Yeah.
But I think it looks pretty good. But I think Hayley Atwell totally sells it as like, you definitely believe this is an older version of Peggy Carter.
Yeah, I think I'm not 100% sure. It could have been a combination. There's definitely some digital effect, and like I said, it's not perfect. It looks a lot better, and we had this conversation. We talked about the first Captain America. Even in this movie, the thin Steve Rogers looks like garbage.
I mean, it's only in for like one very, very brief moment for this one.
But compared to that, the age effect holds up pretty well for a movie from 10 years ago.
Yeah. So I think that yeah, I think the aging worked well. I think Hayley Atwell does a phenomenal job in the very brief moment she's in it. And going back to Chris Evans, I think of all of his scenes in this movie, and I'd say like maybe all of his scenes in MCU, like this might be one of my favorites of him, because mm-hmm. I think he sells it so well, where you have that earnest conversation he's having with the love of his life, who he like, she's the only one who he seems to be able to truly be vulnerable around and truly kind of let them know like how he's feeling. And then to have, you know, this, you know, kind of, I don't know, like regretful reflection on like how the world has turned out and what could have been. But also just see like the joy that they have each other. And then the moment it turns and she forgets about, you know, Steve being alive again, like it's just the way that Chris Evans' face drops, but then you can see he's trying to hold it together to put on a brave face for her and not reveal, you know, how much he's hurting from this. Like there's so much nuance in his performance there, and I think it is absolutely amazing. And again, like that scene, if it doesn't make me cry, it will make me want to cry. Like I can't say enough about it. So anyway, I will get off my high horse now. So we talk a lot about characters and performances. One thing we haven't really gotten into yet is the action, which is, this is a very action-packed movie. You know, make no mistake of that. Aaron, of the different action set pieces that are in here, do you have a favorite?
Right. Before, I would say it used to be, and still probably one of my favorite, is probably when right when they reveal that Bucky is or I guess right before they reveal it, where they're fighting the Hydra soldiers and they're fighting Winter Soldier in like the highway fight. I mean, that also the way it begins, where he just throws the guy into traffic, you just hear like the splat.
Yeah, sorry, it was Jasper Sitwell.
Yeah, Jasper Sitwell.
Sit on that.
I really like that. Again, this is not like I'm trying to tread, you know. Lightly.
No, please.
No, I mean, you probably know that these movies are not going to win like whatever award there are for like choreography, in terms of like they are not doing as much training as say like Keanu Reeves does for like the John Wick movies. Yeah. So there is a lot of, you know, the way that it's cut is made to look like they're really doing it. And I will give it credit that it's never disorienting enough that I don't know what's going on. So,
Batman Begins.
Yeah, but like Batman Begins. So, and it's still a, you know, enjoyable scenes. I mean, enough that you know, you get that, you know, sense of speed and you know, sort of brutality of the Winter Soldier fighting Cap. And but I will say that I think my favorite scene, and just because I can kind of seeing be inserted to any other, and this is not like a knock, this is like, and for some reason, like a compliment, is the scene, pretty much the first, or I guess second big action scene where Nick Fury is like surrounded by all the Hydra agents, and like they're trying to break into his car, and there's the chase scene. I think that's just so well done with the tension of like the integrity of the car, being compromised, where, you know, there the very, very minor bits of humor where he's, you know, saying, well, what isn't broken? And the car tells him that the air conditioning is working. I could see it being in like another spy thriller, but it has just enough, I guess, of that Marvelness where he has this super fancy car that I think that's my favorite action scene.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. I was considering that as mine, because it's especially, I think, effective, because that's before we really know what's going on with the conspiracy. So,
yeah.
Yes, like there are all these Hydra agents around him, but we don't know who they are. Like they look like just cops. Like they're all.
I will say that I guess I knew. And this kind of probably hurt my viewing of the movie the first time, is that I kind of watched this in the wrong order, is that I did not see this movie until Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had already done their big crossover episode. So I already knew, which I love that episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think it's, you know, because you don't know who to trust in that episode. And then you have the big reveal at the end that one of the agents is Hydra. But like, I guess that robbed it of some of the mystery.
I will say I'm very glad that I did not have any knowledge like that going into this. But still, I mean, as the one who has, you know, really carried the banner for reviewing S.H.I.E.L.D. for all those years, Aaron, it's fair that that was your first kind of look into this big twist.
That's true. But that was before I started reviewing S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right. So I forgot. Yeah, you didn't get onto the review circuit till later.
Yeah.
I think that is a really effective action scene. And I think it stands out for me because there's not too many car chases really in the MCU. Like the few that come to mind are, we've got this one, we have the one in Black Panther, which is, I think, another solid one. I really enjoyed that one. And there was one other that I'm blanking on right now. But there's not many. Like, this is not something that I think we see too much from this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think this is a great one. And I think Nick Fury, you know, again, he doesn't necessarily get to have that many action moments. So I'm glad that they gave Samuel Jackson a chance to really let loose with this and have, you know, that moment of humor. What gets me is just like how strong this movie starts in terms of the action. Because you have the opening with Sam Wilson running around the reflection pool at the mall, and then you have not like the shopping mall, like the mall at the Capitol, and with Steve before Natasha comes in and picks up Steve, and then you go right into this huge set piece of the Lumerian Star, the ship that has these hostages, and that is a huge, you know, action set piece. And then it's really not all that much later that you then get that car chase. Like the movie like is pretty front loaded. Well, not even front loaded. I think there's a good sprinkling of action throughout. I will say I'm, even though it may not be the most emotionally impactful of the fight scenes, like certainly I think the last scene between Steve and Bucky and their fight is the most emotionally impactful, but the one I think that gives me like the most goosebumps is the Lumerian Star infiltration, just because that is not something I was expecting from this. Like it has a kind of like this kind of covert kind of ops espionage vibe to it, where I don't know, and in many ways it feels like straight out of Metal Gear Solid. Or Metal Gear Solid 2 more likely. And I just love that. And again, you still get like a good mix of humor there, where like Natasha's still, you know, being, you know, a bit of a snarky jerk the whole time. But yeah, I don't know.
Doesn't he also, like, one of his moves, he like punches his shield and like the impact
yes. You know? Yeah. He also throws a knife into a guy's hand.
Yeah, that was pretty harsh.
Yeah, yeah. But seemingly doesn't kill anyone. At least not intentionally.
Not in that scene, I guess. Yeah.
No. But you do get a good, I think, look at like the distinction between the characters, because yeah, it doesn't seem like Captain America is trying to kill people. Like he's mostly seems like knocking them out or knocking them off the boat, which may or may not kill them. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But then you have Black Widow, who is very clearly like killing people. Like tying a line around a guy's neck so she can then like zip line down the ship. Yeah. Like that guy is totally dead. But again, yeah, so many wonderful action scenes. I mean, in terms of like this is kind of somewhat of a tangent, like in terms of like the effects between like practical and like special effects, like how do you feel like the film does?
I read one thing on IMDb where it was like, yeah, for this movie, they try to use more practical effects because like reasons. And I'm like, that's just a PR spin. Like this movie probably has as many visual effects as any other, you know, movie. But I think they are pretty solid. There's nothing I think that looks, I mean, there are scenes definitely you can definitely tell are CGI, but I think that it's well utilized. And there's nothing about this movie besides that skinny cap scene. But it's not like if you look at some of the very early uses of CGI where you're just like, ooh, that like looks really bad. Like some of the skyline stuff from Batman Forever, which just looks like a screensaver for like Windows 95.
I mean that's
being harsh. There's no screensaver look like that, but you get my
no, I got you. Yeah, I overall, like, I think, yeah, whether or not like there was actually more practical effects than these other films, like, hard to tell. I mean, there is certainly, I think, plenty of CGI being used in that final action sequence, because I mean, they've got three helicarriers, like, you're not going to be able to do that without CGI. But I think there are plenty of other moments where it's like, okay, this does seem like it is practical, like the car chase.
Yeah, the car chase. I mean, there's definitely some CGI in that, but like, you can definitely tell there are real cars crashing into each other, which, you know, I always love to see. You know, I just love seeing property damage in a movie.
You should go back and watch the first Hulk movie then, or the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah,
lots of property damage in there. But I do think that they maybe where like it kind of comes out is not so much in the like the effects, because I do think there's CGI, but like I mean, I think there is, even though it's maybe not the best choreography, like I think there is some good attention paid to choreography. Like it looked like Chris Evans did like have to learn like or train for several different types of martial arts to get ready for this. And you see that in his fight with Batroc on the ship. And later you have Sam Wilson kind of making a joke about that, saying that Cap should get into ultimate fighting. It's a great line. But I don't know. I think the only scene where the effects don't really hold up for me is, and I can't believe we haven't talked about this yet, is after the elevator fight. The elevator fight probably being the most well-known action set.
Oh yeah,
from this, and I think deservedly so. I think.
Oh, so you're talking about when the Quinjet comes after him?
Yes, I don't that looks good. I like this film, but I'll be down on that.
Yeah, I will admit, like, even seeing that in theaters, I thought that looked just a little too, you know, computery. Yeah. But I mean, again, for one thing, Quinjets don't exist in real life, and I'm gonna give them credit for some of those things, like. Some of the realization of these effects, like the Falcon wings that Sam uses, I think are used very well. That's something that you could, without CGI, could not have been realized. I mean, they could probably have done it, but it probably would have been like Christopher Reeve back in the 70s flying in front of a blue screen or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the Falcon effect turned out really well. And also, just because we haven't talked too much about
him, he's the good looking guy on your 10 o'clock. That's a good one.
Anthony Mackie, I love so much. Not just like as a performer, because I think he's so good in all of his appearances in the Marvel Universe. He's also, and I think I may have shared this joke or this before, but he's also incredibly funny when it comes to doing like press junkets. There's a wonderful video that I would highly encourage you to look up, where I think it was maybe in prep for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, he and Sebastian Stan, who plays Bucky, were both at a premiere, I think, like at a red carpet, and Sebastian Stan is, you know, in the middle of like interview, or one of those in the middle of interview, and then Anthony Mackie comes over and says, "Man, oh man, Sebastian Stan, boy, you looking good.
Yeah.
You ever see a man looking that good? He's gonna get arrested because he's killing all the ladies." It's like, Anthony Mackie just so. And then there's another incredible interview he did with Chris Evans.
Yeah.
I think for I believe it was for Civil War, where he's just making jokes about being broke and asking Chris Evans for money. Yeah. It's like so silly. But he's fantastic in the role of Falcon, which it, even that, like, I don't think he necessarily has that much humor, even that it's more dry. But I think struck gold when they cast him for this. And I'm so glad that he has since gotten his moment to shine in this franchise. And we'll talk more about legacy and that discussion later. But I, for one, am very, very happy that he's going to be getting his own film. With that, Aaron, I know, again, I feel like we skipped over it, but like the elevator scene, like any additional thoughts on that elevator fight scene?
I am curious what their plan exactly were. They just trying to, I guess at that point they weren't trying to kill Cap because like they wanted to know what he knew. So like they're just trying to incapacitate him.
Yes.
Because I was like, oh, you just, though, I don't know, even then, like, trying to just put, like, a gun to his head, it probably wouldn't go over well. There is a moment that I noticed later on, but they capture them, and they contemplate killing him. And, was it, whatever the, I forget what the name of the character is.
Rumlow.
Rumlow, yeah. He's like, he says, like, not here, like, let's not execute Captain America in, like, the middle of the highway. Where everybody can see it.
Yeah. So
which, like, it was just so sinister, and I didn't notice that before.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is right after the highway fight. And I do like that moment because I think it really, it makes sense in a way that I think often we have these kind of plot holes of like, well, you captured the good guys, why don't you just kill them? It's like, oh, because there's a news helicopter right above and you don't want the public to see Captain America being executed on live television.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that, okay, we need to, you know, take him and everyone else away before we then kill them. Otherwise, you know, people are going to be on to S.H.I.E.L.D. as, you know, someone being sketchy. I think that works. I think that's an interesting relationship in this movie between Rumlow and Cap, which is very different from the comics. Because in the comics,
he becomes Crossbones. It's not his identity in the comics.
No, it is. It is. He is Crossbones in the comics, but as far as I'm aware, like Crossbones was never like a undercover S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Like in the comics, he's a sadistic mercenary.
Oh, okay.
Like truly like brutal. And ends up teaming up with the Red Skull's daughter, Sin.
Her name is Sin?
Yes.
Oh, okay, whatever.
Yeah, it's comics, you know.
Yeah, comics.
I love them, but also you gotta take the good with the bad. But yeah, so he's very different in this. Like, and obviously we do see him again in Civil War where he does have a more comic accurate look. And maybe that's more in line with, you know, his reputation. But so this was a departure. But I think I like the idea of making him a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent because I think it makes the betrayal and that turn in the elevator fight that much more effective where you see Cap like slowly getting more suspicious of what's going on, like wondering like, why is this guy holding his gun? Why is this guy sweating? Why are they circling around me? So I think, again, this goes back to the who can I trust kind of conspiratorial thriller of it all. And I think that's really why that scene works as well as it does.
Right.
And also because, I mean, it's so claustrophobic having a fight in an elevator. Like, I don't know. It's I feel like we have in the 2010s, there was a big emphasis on like these claustrophobic fights. Like there was this and there was the hallway fight from Daredevil that people went nuts over. We even had that still later on, like when we had the bus fight in Shang-Chi. Maybe that moment isn't dead yet. But it seems like that was, you know, a very good example of it and one that I liked, even though, again, maybe not my favorite set piece in the film, even though I can see why it is probably one of the most memorable moments of this film, which obviously, again, they referenced in Endgame as a result. So Aaron, any other thoughts on the action before we switch here and get into some music?
I don't think so.
Okay. So music is a topic that we don't always dive in too much, but I did want to make sure that we had a chance to give this film its dues in terms of its score. So the music here is by Henry Jackman, who has done a lot. Most notably, I'd say he did this and Civil War. But he also did X-Men First Class, Kong Skull Island, the Wreck-It Ralph movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Kick-Ass movies. He's on a few video games. And he did Detective Pikachu.
Which, oh, okay.
You know, clearly an all-timer. But yeah, in terms of like the music, did you think like the score worked for the film, or did you find any of it like particularly memorable?
Yeah, I mean, I know this is like one of your, I don't say I want to, I know, but I'm pretty sure this is a score that you've listened to many times. Am I correct?
Yes, it is. Yes. Saved on my Spotify. Yeah. As a go-to, although not my favorite of the MCU scores.
Okay. So I think that it was smart that, I mean, they're changing the setting. They have this sort of very traditional kind of orchestral score with the first Avenger by Alan Silvestri that I think is very appropriate. And then he also did the Avengers, which I think also was a good pick. But this is, you know, being more of a kind of, I don't know, some of it's almost kind of experimental in some of the, it's got a sort of industrial sound to it. Some of it almost doesn't even kind of register what you would think as necessarily normal music. You kind of have this sort of screeching noise that represents the Winter Soldier, but is very menacing.
Yes, that is what I refer to as the evil kazoo.
Okay.
And I love it. Yes. Yeah. No, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, right. Yeah, there is the evil kazoo, but there I thought there was like, it sounds almost like, or maybe that is what you're talking about. Yeah. There are some very like, they're not, you know, I guess the most harmonious sounds, but for the sort of like, I guess, tension and cacophony that they're going for, it's very effective.
Yeah, which in some ways reminds me a bit of some of the soundtrack for or the score for The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
From Hans Zimmer. Like there are moments of that you get pretty chaotic. And like there is this sense that, you know, this music is kind of harsh.
Right. That is true. But like this music is sort of like, it's sort of like his, I don't know, it's like his cue to come in, but it never exactly feels exactly like a ripoff of the Joker theme, which always felt like it has these different things where it's got, you know, the ticking of the clock. That's, you know, all about, you know, the plan that they have doing. And then you have sort of like the rising tension. They're not exactly the same. So like, I think they are both wonderful in their respective movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. The evil kazoo is one of my favorite things. I love it so much. I think the music for this is fantastic. I think it does an excellent job of really elevating the action scenes.
Right. Yeah. It definitely does get you pumped up in some of the action sequences. I don't know. I think like they first introduced like, I don't know if it's like a Cap running theme, but like when he's on the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah.
Very, very good. I will say you mentioned the more orchestral score from the first film by Alan Silvestri. I do like that one a bit more, if I'm being honest. But they're also very different. So it's a little apples and oranges. In terms of like other scores in the MCU that I think I like a little bit more, I am biased towards the score for Black Panther. I think that is wonderful. I mean, obviously it won an Oscar, so it's like pretty good stuff. And then also the ones for Thor: The Dark World by Mark Mothersbaugh.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's very catchy. That's another one that's like very synth pop, and it shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah.
As well as I love Michael Giacchino's score for Ant-Man. That might be, and I don't know if this is like a controversial pick, that might be my favorite of all.
Oh, really?
I think that might be the score I've listened to the most times out of any Marvel movie.
Okay. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be stuck in my head for the rest of the day now. But no, this one's also very good. Aaron, I feel like we've talked again a lot about this movie in terms of like its connection to the other Marvel movies. I don't know, like in terms of like other Cap movies or other movies featuring him or just other MCU films, like you don't have to give me like a definitive number ranking of all 30 plus games, unless you really want to.
No.
But yeah, well, I mean, how does this feel compare for you?
Right. Well, first I just want to touch on a few themes that I think that some people were, if we're talking about like how does Marvel try to tackle serious themes at the time? So this movie, well, I guess Civil War is, you know, a lot about like interventionism and stuff like that. Where do you draw the line? This movie is a lot about, you know, security and surveillance. I do find it interesting that some people were like, oh, well, like it tries to make like a very nuanced, you know, kind of argument, but then like that gets thrown out the window when Hydra is revealed to be the bad guy, which I think to some degree is true, maybe, but like I think that we're still is able to have that conversation. This is a movie that's very much a product of its time politically, where you look at this, I think it was the year before Star Trek Into Darkness had a similar kind of plot line that's sort of talking about like the Obama era drone program that this movie is definitely referencing, even if it's not mentioned by name. And I think somebody else said it, that like this movie kind of like scarily in some ways, if you look at like the rise of like right wing extremism, is some ways is sort of like ahead of its time and its villains.
Oh, yes, 100%. Definitely makes this movie a little horrifically fortune telling.
But as far as like this, this is definitely in, I would say this is a top tier MCU movie. I wouldn't be able to tell you where it is in terms of, I mean, honestly, somewhere with like the first Iron Man movie or like Infinity War. I will say that this movie did, though, in terms of relation to other movies, kind of start a trend that, like, it's not this movie's fault necessarily. And I think it worked for this movie. That this is kind of the point where, like, the Marvel movies started to get very gray visually. There's a lot of, like, gray conference rooms, gray street, you know, corners, gray, you know, gray on gray, you know, floating ships in the air. I think for this movie tonally it works, and there's been a lot of like theories as to why that has kind of happened with some of the MCU. Part of it is like if you have everything that's super colorful, then like it kind of looks like somebody just threw up neon on the screen, so you kind of have to be pick and choose. There's all like things with like color theory. So while this is not always, I would say, the most pretty movie, I think that this is very much in line with the genre of the movie. So it doesn't, and you got some like cool effects with like some of the camera lenses, some of the lens flares. You still have a certain, or some of the, with the anamorphic lens, some of the shallow focus, it still looks pretty cinematic. So
yeah, you know, I gotta have my shallow focus, you know.
Yeah,
that if there's no shallow focus, you know, why are you even here?
The depth of field. Yeah, I know you don't know what I'm talking about.
I know. But as long as you know what you're talking about, which I trust you do. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. That's something I didn't really consider getting into in terms of like cinematography. Is that Ray? Would that fall under cinematography?
It's cinematography, color grading. It's all kind of intertwined with one another.
Okay. Yeah, because the movie is, I will say, yeah, it's pretty gray. But I don't fault it for that as much as I do, I don't know, there's a few other movies in the MCU that like I think do that to a fault. Like Age of Ultron is a very gray movie.
I was gonna say more Endgame, that scene where the Hulk talks to the Ancient One in New York is one of the ugliest scenes I've ever seen in a blockbuster movie. The color grading, it looks like they didn't grade it at all. It looks just like it's like a raw digital video file that they didn't grade.
Oh, man. Some hot takes over here. So I overall like visually, I like this movie. But yeah, the color grading, I can see what you mean. In terms of the themes, again, I do think it is, for me, you know, very reminiscent of The Dark Knight as a reflection on, you know, the ethics of surveillance. As you said, like, there is some distinction, like, oh, once it's revealed that Hydra is behind it, then it's like, okay, well, that's not something we should do now. But to be fair, like, from the beginning, like, Cap, even when Cap thinks it's still S.H.I.E.L.D. He's already leery of it. He says, like, you know, this isn't freedom. This is fear. You know, you're holding a gun to the world and calling it. I forget the exact term. But so there is, I think, already like this sense of, like, no, like this is a bad thing. And I think it's, again, I think it's relevant as much now or even more now than it is. Just there's the one part where Jasper Sitwell is talking about how they use Project Insight in order to decide who their target should be. And it's like the idea, like the 21st century is like, you know, this digital book that they learn to read because of Arnim Zola, which they even talk about Robot Boy there, or kind of computer screen face.
Yeah.
But I think that's another like good change from the comics, because I don't know if you've ever seen Arnim Zola from the comics. He looks really stupid.
Okay.
He looks like
Do you have like a sideways baseball cap?
No. He looks like Krang from Ninja Turtles almost, where he's got like this robot body and then he's got a monitor screen in his stomach area where his face is.
Oh, that's, yeah, it is like Krang.
Or like it, maybe it's his chest, not his stomach. It's really dumb. And again, I don't want to dunk on the comics because I do love comics in general and I do enjoy a lot of the storylines, even if some of them can be pretty silly. But this was another thing that I'm very glad they updated it to have him be this face in the server room. I think also having that in the location where Cap had his training and, you know, first got the transformation to become Cap, I think is also particularly upsetting. That is like this place where, you know, you were born again, not Daredevil, is now this place where this evil that you fought to destroy has grabbed on as a parasite and taking hold of the thing that people that you loved fought for to build. But anyway, in terms of like how I view this film, I will say definitively, like, I do know where this ranks for me. And it's a tie. It's a tie for number one of all the Marvel movies for me between this and Black Panther.
Oh, okay.
And I will continue to stand by that.
I think those are very solid choices. And this is, I mean, you already had like the, I think this is the movie that besides the first Iron Man got people to really pay attention to the standalone movies.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think, I mean, by comparison, I don't think the first Captain America movie did all that.
No, it didn't do all that. This did much better at the box office.
Yeah, so yeah, this
and
one
it got that Avengers bump.
Well, yeah, I mean, so the first Avenger made
it's like 300 something.
Yeah, 370 million, whereas this made over 700. So like a huge jump in the box office. And no, I think you're right that this kind of further cemented that okay, these standalones can be, you know.
And I do like that this movie is like it does have technically it has other characters that are you know, it has Black Widow, has Falcon, but it is a Captain America movie. And like I think somebody commented on Twitter recently. It's like, or X, sorry, it's X now. But they're like, Captain America should have gone to Tony Stark. It's like, but yeah, but like, as somebody who's been reading more comics recently, like I borrowed some of your Nightwix comics, and like there are crossovers with guest characters all the time. It's like, yes, it makes sense, but like, I think it's in some ways a detriment to the lead character where it's less of a focus on them. So while it would make sense that he could go to Tony Stark for help, I'm glad that he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you could say like, oh, well, like they probably expected him to go there anyway. That's why he went to Sam, because they didn't know that he knew Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they could have waved that away somehow. And it might be a minor plot hole. But yeah, it's not one that I'm too concerned about. But no, I do think, yes, ultimately this is a Captain America movie, much more so than, well, even Civil War is a Captain America movie, but even though it's also an Avengers movie.
Yeah. Avengers 2.5 or whatever, as might have been Anthony Mackie who said that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's an accurate description of it. But no, the other thing I love about this movie is, yes, it fully delves into the character of Captain America and his relationship with Bucky. his, you know, new friendship with Sam. But it also, I love the, again, like, it does so much with some of these relationships. Like, you get to see that relationship with Fury evolve from this distrust to, like, okay, like, this kind of, like, begrudging respect. And then for Natasha and him, like, you really see, like, this transformation where they go from, like, kind of friends at work to, like, truly trusted confidants, which then makes later moments in the franchise so much you know, more effective. Like, it's a small moment, but, like, the scene in Endgame when they're talking and Natasha says she's gonna throw a peanut butter sandwich at Steve, like, I love that moment because it builds off of this relationship that, yes, they had interactions and they have a relationship in Avengers, but this is really where you get to see them become close. This is where it really blossoms. And I said earlier that I think that this might be Samuel Jackson's best performance in the MCU. I think I'm not entirely sure about this. I might say this is also Scarlett Johansson's best performance.
Right. Where would you rank it in terms of her hairstyles as Black Widow?
I know, I like this hairstyle. I know some people don't like this one. I'm okay with this one. I might be a little controversial in saying this, but I actually kind of like her hair in the first or in Iron Man 2, in her
the kind of curly wavy one.
Yeah, okay. it kind of works. I know it's works. Okay. it's a little strange, but no, I like
it's Doctor Strange. No,
I will say that her hair in this definitely ranks well above her blonde hair. Hated that. Hate is a strong word. I just like that. And similar in Endgame, like, when she had, like, the remaining blonde at the end of her hair, not a huge fan of that either. But yeah, so I'd say this is in my upper half of Black Widow hair. So Aaron, but before we close out, so obviously, you know, following Endgame, we're not really going to have any more Steve Rogers Captain America movies, but we did have the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series on Disney Plus, and we are now going to be getting a new Captain America movie with Sam Wilson as the titular character. Believe that is now slated to come out next year after the strikes, and that's gone through several different kind of iterations in terms of, like, just the name of it. I think right now it is Captain America Brave New World.
It was like New World Order or something?
Yes. Yeah, that's what it used to be. And there may have been some other name before that.
I'm going to have George W. Bush come? No, that's it. That's a joke people aren't going to get. Or, I mean, George H.W. Bush. Sorry. I messed it up. Darn it.
That's okay. I didn't get the reference either way. But no, so having watched this, like, what are your hopes for the rest of this franchise now that it's transitioning to Sam Wilson?
Right. I don't have too many requirements. I think that, you know, he's proved very capable to be, you know, the lead. I'm assuming that Bucky will be in it to some capacity, though maybe not as much as Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I don't know.
It's unclear. He's definitely going to be in the Thunderbolts movie.
It can very much survive without him. The only thing that makes me a little nervous is, so Harrison Ford has come, he's replacing William Hurt as Thunderbolt Ross.
Yes.
And I'm afraid, I've heard that he's supposed to be Red Hulk in the movie, and I'm just like, this sounds like a disaster. That's the only thing that makes me nervous.
You don't want to see a giant CGI Harrison Ford?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
You already saw him with CGI ants. That was enough for you?
Yeah.
That was a Crystal Skull reference for those who didn't get that one. I don't know. I'm hopeful for the next Cap movie, just because I know some people didn't love it. But I generally enjoyed the Falcon and Winter Soldier series. I think it was especially strong whenever they did get to have the emphasis on Sam Wilson and him trying to come to terms with the burden of, you know, carrying on the mantle of Captain America, but also trying to come to terms with what does it mean for a Black man in America to represent this kind of patriotic character. I think the film or the series, I think, did a really good job exploring that, especially the scenes where you had him meeting with the soldier who was previously kind of experimented on and fought without Steve's knowledge from a similar program. So I thought those were really effective, and I believe they have the same writer from that, or one of the same writers from that series on here. So if they get more of that, then I'll be very happy.
And I would say, so he also is retaining the wings, right? So
yes.
So the combination of the wings with the shield lends itself to a lot of interesting action sequences.
Yes. Yeah. And having read a few of the comic runs with Sam Wilson as Captain America, I do really like him in that role. I think there are some really good stories to tell. Curious if they're going to bring in his like the new Falcon sidekick. They kind of tease that a little bit in the show.
Oh, okay.
But no, I'm hopeful. Again, I really like Anthony Mackie. I think if given the right material, it could be really good. I just, you know, really am hoping that, you know, it'll be you know, something that's a little less divisive than the show, just because, again, I think the show didn't really land because they kind of messed up the kind of like they were going for a similar like kind of geopolitical story there.
Yeah.
But that time it was about like a refugee crisis. And I think that's where the film that's where the series really fell short, is that they didn't really do a good job exploring that.
Yeah.
And also with what they did with Sharon Carter. We didn't even talk about Sharon Carter, but she's not really in it all that much.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot. I mean, if we eventually get to Civil War, there's lots of thoughts about that.
Yes. 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 Is it gross that Cap kissed her? That's a question for another day.
I have a question for you. So like, does watching this movie make you want to watch anything spy related, espionage related, or conspiracy theory related that's not related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yeah. No, okay. I would say there's a few things that this definitely makes me want to check out. You mentioned 3 Days of the Condor.
Yeah, that's not, I'll be the honest, 3 Days of the Condor is a very convoluted movie. It's not honestly that good. It has its moments. I mean, you got Max von Sydow. He's a very interesting character in that movie. I mean, if you're going into conspiracy stuff with Robert Redford, I would prefer All the President's Men, which is not really a spy thing because it's all about journalism, but still, you know, there is a political conspiracy, which, you know, I talked to Allison Lips on her Pop Break Goes to Washington podcast about that. She and I disagreed on whether or not it helped to read the book. I was of the opinion that it helped reading the book, knowing what was going on. And she said that the book was so boring that, like, I don't think she finished it. I would recommend that. Then you got stuff like more like surveillance thrillers. You got stuff like Enemy of the State with Will Smith and I'm blanking on his name, Gene Hackman. That's a good one. Obviously, you got like the Jack Ryan movies, which I don't know. They're not as super spy-y as you got the Bourne movies, obviously. Other political like thriller stuff. I don't know how many people really like The Pelican Brief as a movie, but that's also kind of like a political thriller. I like that.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm definitely interested in
The Spy Who Came in from the Cold, both a movie and book. I believe you got me that book, so that's all about spy craft.
I did get you that book. I'm definitely interested in watching more of that genre. Another one that I'm embarrassed to say I've never watched. I've never seen the original Manchurian Candidate.
That's another one. That's a good one.
Yeah, where Tony Stark literally calls Bucky that in Civil War, I think.
Oh, okay.
There's definitely a lot of those I need to see. This also makes me want to see more of Robert Redford's filmography.
Right. Yeah, because you have not just his filmography as an actor, but as a director.
Right. Right. And speaking of Pop Break Goes to Washington with Allison Lips, I was on that podcast as a guest to talk about a Robert Redford movie. We talked about The Candidate. Don't think that episode's been published yet, so something for people to look forward to. Hopefully that'll be coming out in the coming months before the election. So I love this film. I'm so glad that we had a chance to talk about it. I could go on for 20 more hours talking about it, but I don't want to bore people with that. So on that note, Aaron, thank you for giving me a chance to talk about a movie I love so much and that means so much to me. I really appreciate it. So with that, Aaron, before we go, can you tell people where they can find you online and if there's anything you're working on currently?
Right. So as I mentioned, you can find me on X, so not really. I'm not currently working on anything, but I do post, you know, the stuff that, you know, we podcast about. I mentioned previously that I'm rewatching Lost, and somebody please give, I don't care what it is, Terry O'Quinn can be in any of the MCU movies. Just give him a role. We have failed him.
Maybe he'll be
I mean Evangeline Lilly's got it with, you know, with Wasp, but
I could see him eventually. I don't know, he's unfortunately had kind of a disappointing career post Lost. So, and certainly if people want to hear more from us, they can also go to the previous episodes of the Anniversary Brothers podcast, the film version of which can be found here on Pop Break Today, where last month we talked about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Or if you wanted to go to the Pop Break TV feed, you can go to our latest TV episode where we discussed the 25th anniversary of Futurama. And then for other podcasts involving me, because I've got a million of them, I can also be found on Anime Pop, the Pop Breaks anime podcast, with my wonderful co-host Amanda Rivas. This past month, we had a wonderful discussion about Ninja Kamui on Max. That should be released by now. So definitely encourage people to check that out. We had a wonderful guest from our TV editor, Avani, and it was wonderful having her on and discussing anime with her. And then people can also find me on the TV Break podcast, where every month I talk with Bill and Alex about the ins and outs of TV. And on that note, I also want to definitely make sure we plug Bill versus the MCU, which is the Pop Break's ongoing MCU rewatch and now multiversal exploration of Marvel. So certainly, you know, if you want to hear more about the Captain America movies or anything related to the MCU, highly encourage people to check that out. Was just listening also to the Socially Distanced podcast, where not too long ago they did an Avengers draft for their 200th episode, which was very fun.
Right, it's like a fantasy draft, not like draft beer.
No, maybe that's the twist at the end. And they did a wonderful job with that. I will say I'm very proud of and happy that my Anime Pop co-host chose Sam Wilson in the draft. Very, very happy to see that. But so again, plenty of Marvel content here from us and the other podcasters here at the Pop Break and the writers from the Pop Break. So yeah, just encourage you to check that all out, and really hope that you'll be back with us next time. So until then though, Aaron, again, thank you so much. And for all of you listening, until then, remember, on your left.